Totally Football Show. Premier League begins. Arsenal suffer short-term Emery loss, but it all looks very familiar to supporters as Man City recollect 3 points at the Emirates. We ran up all the opening weekend news in the Totally Football Show. That's right, you're on board a brand new season on the good ship Totally, here on the bridge. Daniel Storey.
Good morning.
Tom Williams.
Hello, James.
And Michael Cox.
Hello.
Hi, Michael, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Great news. Tom, you've had a brilliant weekend. Tom, since he's come in, has mentioned nothing but his favourite bits of the weekend. There's geese in there, there's Mike and Tyler's outtakes. What else? People being hit in the... Well, go nads.
People being hit in the nuts. I think Mark Noble and Jack Wilshere each using their testicles to block shots
right.
within 2 seconds of each other at Anfield yesterday was a potential highlight of the
Did
weekend.
Did you huzzah?
I chortled a little bit, yeah.
Did you have a chortly moment this weekend, Daniel?
No, I don't think I did have a... Which sounds particularly bleak. Yeah, that makes my week sound very bleak.
What about the goose running on the field at Macclesfield Town?
I'll take one for the team from Tom then and mention the goose.
Right.
There was a goose on the pitch at Macclesfield Town, a Canadian goose.
Oh, yeah.
Goose poor yet, goose hit ink, I've got nothing else.
That's brilliant. No, but off the top of your head, that's excellent. But it was chased off. It was manhandled by the players.
It was. I think it was some ground stuff. By the looks of it, it was shooed off. We were just saying that no matter how glitzy and sophisticated football gets, an animal scurrying onto the pitch unexpectedly will never not be amusing.
That's which the is basis of Joey Barton's career, right?
Well, there you go.
Right, Michael, you're all about the fun in football. What did you most enjoy this weekend?
Well, I did overhear a Martin Tyler conversation actually, which was him and Peter Drury. Discussing whether you should go for Kepa or Arrizabalaga for Chelsea's new goalkeeper.
Uh-huh.
And they both reluctantly agreed that actually it's Arrizabalaga because that's what's on the back of his shirt.
Brilliant. You mentioned that he used to be assistant manager at Kingstonian.
Martin Tyler, yes, he did. And he was somewhat vocal towards referees as assistant managers at non-league level are. And it just doesn't feel right to hear swearing in Martin Tyler's voice.
Can you imagine if it was Peter Drury doing it?
That would be fantastic swearing. I'd pay to hear that level of swearing.
There you go, Peter.
On commentators deciding what to call players' chat, interesting to note that I think both Martin Tyler and Guy Mowbray of the BBC have decided that they're going to refer to Arsenal's new centre-back, Socratis
Papastopoulos,
as Socrates,
yeah,
just because it's easier to say. That's the
well,
only reason.
It does
reason.
Say Socrates on his shirt.
Yeah, it does. But
I think Arsenal are going for Socrates as well.
Yeah, just for ease of pronunciation. Yeah. I mean, you know, fair enough.
Good point, Tom. You were at the Fulham game, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
All right, looking forward to hearing more about that later on. And indeed, all the big talking points of this weekend. We've got loads of questions from you. Thank you ever so much. Listener, we're going to begin, though, with Socrates and co. at the Emirates in Sunday's big clash with Man City.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Starting at the Emirates then, Arsenal Man City, who was there? Oh, Michael, right, excellent. Goals from Sterling and Bernardo Silva, and a Man City team as dominant when they wanted to be as they were last season.
Yeah, it was a very comfortable win for them. I thought they defended very well. I think that was maybe the most interesting thing. I thought Stones and Laporte is a pretty new centre-back partnership. They only played once together last season, which was on the final day of the season. And they defended very high up the pitch, and yet Arsenal couldn't get past them. It was a really impressive showing. Going forward, I think they were a little bit different from last season. They had the wingers coming in, Mahrez from the right and Sterling from the left, with Mendy and Walker often overlapping. And they just look comfortable, and they look comfortable despite not having De Bruyne and Silva, who I think were probably their two most important players last year. So it was a statement of intent, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah, the quality of their bench was kind of scary for anybody thinking about challenging them this year.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they could bring De Bruyne off and Gabriel Jesus as well. And it was a different City. It felt like different passing combinations, and Guardiola was talking afterwards how they were pressing in a slightly different way. And, you know, we were all expecting to see a new Arsenal, whereas I think really we learnt more about what Manchester City are going to do this season. The Premier League hasn't been retained for, what, 9 years now, as we've all been talking about recently, but it's been a long time since there was as strong a favourite at the start of the season as this City side.
A lot of Arsenal fans talking about same old problems. It's quite harsh to take too many conclusions from an opening game for Emery against a side of the calibre of Man City. But what conclusions would you draw, Mr. 16 of them?
I think it emphasised that it's been 92 days between Arsene Wenger's last game and Unai Emery's first game.
What does that mean?
Well, it's an incredibly short period of time to arrest a fairly long-term decline in Arsenal's entire structure, both off the field and on the field. I thought that if Emery is going to implement his own pressing philosophy, then there's an awful lot of work to be done. There are several players who are not particularly fit for that purpose. That's not necessarily a criticism of them. It's a criticism of them in that particular style. Yesterday, Mesut Ozil was kind of playing as a sort of hard-working right winger being asked to track back, but at times in the first half, he swapped with Mkhitaryan because either he was running out of energy to do that, or it was stymieing his attacking, his attacking play. Aaron Ramsey played as the furthest forward central midfielder, but I think I'm right in saying he attempted 11 passes yesterday, which is 15 fewer than he ever has in a Premier League game before, wow, where he's played 50 minutes or more. He basically did nothing, and once in the first half he got through and was offside and had a chance, and after about 2 minutes he had a shot on goal as well. But after that we just didn't see enough of him.
Right. Ravin, ask you if there's any reasons to be cheerful for Arsenal. Tom, did you glean anything?
As the guys have alluded to, Arsenal look very similar to how they looked under Arsene Wenger. And in many ways the team that Unai Emery picked looked like the kind of team that Arsene Wenger would pick. I mean, you had Ainsley Maitland-Niles filling in at left back and being horribly exposed against Riyad Mahrez and Kyle Walker. Matteo Guendouzi being thrown in at the deep end, 19 years old, starting in central midfield, mainly I think because Lucas Torreira isn't fully fit after the World Cup. He came on in the second half and Guendouzi generally played quite well, but was at fault, or one of several players at fault, for the Sterling goal, and also produced an absolute clanger second half when he misjudged a long ball and allowed Aguero to scamper through. I thought Arsenal looked a bit better when Alexander Lacazette came on. I think he gave them a bit of bite. Unfortunately, Maitland-Niles went off injured, but Lichtsteiner, who came on in his place, he seemed to have a bit more aggression about him. I think a lot of the talk about how Emery will change Arsenal is focused on what they'll do without the ball, more coordinated pressing, more aggressive pressing. The thing that struck me the most was what they were doing on the ball, specifically the way that they were trying to play out from the back, starting with Petr Cech, and much to the discomfort of the home fans, who at one point were so fed up of Arsenal trying to play the ball out from the back and then losing it on the edge of their own box, that they sort of almost bullied Cech into just launching a goal kick long. And this after he'd almost put the ball into his own net.
Superb moment.
With what would have probably been the best Arsenal own goal since that Lee Dixon one against Coventry City all those years back, about 3 yards away from just first time pass straight into his own bottom corner. So, yeah, I mean, clearly Arsenal are changing a little bit, some new faces and some new intentions, but there wasn't much that struck me as being extremely positive.
I was going to ask Mike, what was the atmosphere like at the Emirates on what was the opening day of the era that so many of them had longed for, the post-Arsenal?
It was good, actually. It felt like the fans got in there early, which I think does make a difference to atmospheres. And it was loud. It was definitely loud. It was louder than I can remember it being at any point last season. And it was throughout the first half, really. The problem was that City's second goal killed it, and you had the familiar sight of lots of empty seats by the end. I think the question about whether there are any positives is actually a very good question, because the answer is no. It wasn't that it was disastrous for Arsenal, but nothing quite clicked. You saw the intentions. You saw the intentions with playing out from the back, but they gave the ball away. You saw the intentions with counter-attacking, but they made wrong decisions. You saw the intentions of pressing high up, but they got bypassed by Laporte and Stones, who were so good in possession. And I think that's the frustrating thing for Emery. He didn't really know what to say at the end. I mean, in fairness, his English is not yet great, so that's probably partly the reason. But usually in this situation, the manager will say, well, the pressing was really good, but we need to work on this. But I don't think there was anything he could really point to. And Guendouzi, who, if you've never seen any of these players before, that was a terrible performance, because he did keep making mistakes, and yet people are saying he's got the right idea, and that kind of summed it all up. Arsenal did have the right ideas, but they're a long way from being, able to compete, really.
I think the Czech thing and the passing out from the back is possibly the kind of archetypal image, because that's what Manchester City did and Pep Guardiola tried to do at the start. Brought in Claudio Bravo, and it looked like it did with Czech yesterday, where the supporters are kind of watching through their fingers and worried about mistakes. Pep Guardiola spent 35 million on Edison. Yesterday, that defence, 50 million Kyle Walker, basically 50 million John Stones, 50 million pound plus Laporte, basically 50 million on Benjamin Mendy. easily the most expensive defence ever assembled. And Unai Emery isn't going to get that luxury. He isn't going to be able to solve this with lavish spending a la Pep Guardiola and Jose Mourinho and even Jurgen Klopp. He's going to have to do it with coaching. And that's a huge, huge ask.
We could use Bernd Leno, the keeper that he bought.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't start Leno, actually. I think Leno, that was the third time in his career he's been on a bench. He left Bayer Leverkusen, a club who have dropped from Champions League grace to Europa League. I assume he didn't move from Leverkusen to Arsenal to be in exactly the same position, but a reserve.
Right.
So I expect him to come in soon. And Cech was pretty panicky. But yeah, there's a huge job for Emery to do.
One other thing about City, Benjamin Mendy looked pretty special, eh, Tom?
Yeah, he looked good when he got forward well. He got the two assists, little pass for Sterling for the first goal, and then really nice assist for the second goal, getting to the byline and cutting it back for Bernardo Silva. He obviously missed most of last season, managed to get fit for the end of the season, but then didn't manage to win his place back in the France team because Lucas Hernandez came in and did really well. So he should be fresh. He looked fresh. I didn't think he was faultless. I think Arsenal's one good chance of the first half came after Hector Bellerin skipped past him quite easily. But interestingly, he got a bit of a telling off from Pep Guardiola afterwards. Slightly cryptic. I wasn't sure whether it referred to his performances. There was also a mention of his fondness for social media-ing.
Yeah, it was interesting because, I mean, I assumed that with Mendy playing, he was just going to always be overlapping and Sterling would be coming inside. But if you look at the pass for the first goal, he took up the kind of Fabian Delph position, if we can call it that, and played it outside.
Also, had there been VAR, he almost certainly would have conceded a penalty for that neck block he did on
Ramsey, I think.
Was it Aaron Ramsey? Yeah. A lot of people, Paul, for example, does anyone else keep waiting for VAR to be used only to realise there is no VAR? Tom, I know this is something you really wanted to mention.
Yeah, but I think
Michael really doesn't want you to mention
it. I just think it's worth flagging up, and you know, a lot of people have mentioned it on Twitter. I mean, that watching a game on TV, that is now your instinct. And I was almost surprised by that because, you know, obviously, we've never had VAR in English football, so it's
you
a
got
new
used to it already,
but you get used to it. Yeah. And I mean, there were quite a few incidents
maybe
over the weekend.
Maybe you'll get unused to it then. If a month was enough,
but then
maybe
I'll have to get used to it again when it eventually comes in. So I just don't know what to do with myself.
I think you'll be up to the job.
Listeners, here's a question for you. Have you read The Economist? Like, actually read it? Because it's not just about economics. It's about everything. Politics, science, business, literature, and even a bit of football from time to time. For 170 years, The Economist has delivered trustworthy intelligence to generations of smart, thoughtful people just like you. And because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can have a copy for free. The Economist helps readers prepare for what's going on in the world around them. And in today's dynamic world, facts matter more than ever. But you don't have to be an international financier to enjoy it. I brought my subscription in January, and I couldn't do without it now. Seriously, Mighty Knees Media is now this close to launching the Totally Belt and Road Initiative show. Look it up on The Economist website. It's amazing. The Economist is the smart guide to the forces changing your world, so get your free print copy now. Just text the word football to 78070. That's football to 78070.
Here's a question from Christopher Shoop Worrell, which he posted on our Facebook page, because you can. He says, do any of the point would radically change their pre-season predictions after the first weekend of the season? My closeted hope for a Pellegrini revolution overlooked how uneven West Ham squad still is. Talk about West Ham later. Any of your predictions you're feeling less confident about?
Well, not in terms of the performance, because it's only been 1 week, but I do think there was a couple of quite important results. I mean, I was kind of wavering over Watford and Brighton as my third relegated side, and the fact that Watford have got 3 points could be pretty crucial at the end of the season.
Big 3 points, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Richarlison, who of course left Watford, that was another of the big turn-ups this weekend. We'll talk about those topics later on. By the way, if you want to get a question in, at The Totally Show or at AC Jimbo. Bingo. Ooh, let's talk about the other big clubs. We'll do all that Watford and other stuff very, very soon. But just to check through the other big six teams, well, you've got Chelsea. Very impressive 3-0 winners for you, Daniel, at the John Smith Stadium against Huddersfield. Or were Huddersfield a bit... were they in a sorry state, if you'll excuse me?
Well, I think there was a bit of a reaction after the Community Shield when Manchester City schooled Chelsea that, oh, it's going to take Sarri a long time, etc, etc. Better teams than Chelsea and Arsenal will be schooled by Manchester City this season if they get up to full pelt and do it quickly. What we saw on Saturday was Sarri's impact. Ross Barkley started in a midfield three with Mateo Kovacic still to come in that midfield three. Marcus Alonso started as a regulation left back in the Premier League for the first time in a long time. It didn't seem to stop him getting forward. And we saw, as we expected pre-season, more of N'Golo Kante in the opposition half than his own. Obviously, he scored the first goal. It was a little bit of a shinned volley, and that's being generous to him. But he was in a position where he wouldn't necessarily have expected to be last season. So there certainly were changes. The one interesting thing I'd say about Chelsea, which is actually a negative, is that Alvaro and Morata look pretty wretched again. And we know what he did with Dries Mertens at Napoli. So the idea of Hazard maybe playing that role is a possibility.
You reckon Cortese, AJ Cortese, great name, asking that question, could we see Sarri using Hazard in a Mertens-esque role, Tom?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a surprise, would it? I mean, Morata started relatively well last season and then went off the boil quite spectacularly. And Chelsea ended up being more dependent on Olivier Giroud than I think a lot of us expected when he arrived. And clearly that the sort of movement that Sarri's football requires, I'm not sure that's particularly well suited to Morata. I mean, Hazard playing as the central striker, if you like, would look very different under Sarri to the way it looked under Antonio Conte. But one of the sad things last season about when Hazard was used there was that he spent too much time with his back to goal. And what you want is Hazard picking up the ball fairly deep, as he did with his assist for Pedro at Huddersfield, and driving forward. And I didn't watch that much of Sarri at Napoli to know how Mertens fitted into the team. But
I wouldn't say he played with his back to goal. I don't know that.
My instinct is that Hazard playing as that central striker would suit him better than it did under Conte. But my instinctive thought is that you still want Hazard with as much freedom as possible, which probably means on the left.
Well, it's interesting as well that they played Willian on the left. And I don't think he's ever played there for Chelsea before with Pedro on the right. So that would play into the fact that they keep, you know, that's the template and Hazard will slot in. And Hazard was really, really good when he came on, despite the fact he seems to have, should we charitably say, bulked up a little bit over the summer.
It was termed by one tabloid newspaper as a dad bod.
Yeah, really?
It was a dad bod.
Don't think the bright yellow kit helps, but
it's not a flattering cover.
No.
We've all had a long summer, haven't we?
Yeah.
Great start from Jorginho, a lovely penalty. MVR Murty asking who we think was the most impressive debutant of the weekend. Would he be in your thoughts for that? It's going to be Naby Keita, is it?
Keita was very good. I did enjoy Jorginho's penalty. I'm not sure I've seen someone take a penalty like that before, ever, in that he runs up to the ball quite deliberately and then does this little jump and then just tucks it in. Yeah. And the keeper was completely flummoxed.
The sort of thing you'd do if you were taking a penalty against a toddler in the garden. Yeah. Just to make them go down very, very...
It was a proper banter penalty. I really enjoyed it.
He did it with Napoli as well.
Right.
Might not see it much because I assume Hazard will be back on penalties, but it's fantastic to watch. I'd really... really admire players who can wait for the goalkeeper to move. It's something we've come to take for granted, but to have that level of confidence, I think, is just incredible.
Well, a great start for Sarri, who, of course, came straight from his day job as a hospital porter. Although, you know, temper your enthusiasm. Scolari opened his Chelsea campaign with a 4-0 win over Portsmouth. So, just saying. And Liverpool, they had a 4-0 win, actually, over West Ham. Woof. Some Liverpool performance, and we talk about the depth at Man City. A lot of depth to this pool, Dan.
Yeah, they looked very, very good yesterday against a West Ham team that will take a while, I think, to be organised by Manuel Pellegrini, and they did look like a team of component parts and square pegs and round holes. The interesting thing about Keita is that he does provide something that Liverpool haven't had before. You know, Fabinho might come in that number six role that Jordan Henderson's been doing, but Naby Keita is different to any other midfielder at Liverpool. He does play between the lines, which last season I think Liverpool were basically three regulation central midfielders and then three forwards, and the way that they kind of blended those two was for the forwards to drop deep, and obviously it worked brilliantly with Salah picking the ball up from deep and running at defenders. Keita will give him another option there. He will go to meet the forwards, and he means that maybe Mane, for example, doesn't have to drop quite as deep. We saw for the first goal yesterday that driving run from midfield. It makes teams look foolish because it looks like suddenly Keita's got 30, 40 yards of space to run into. And if that makes Liverpool better, then it basically solves their only attacking issue of last season. You asked about pre-season predictions you're regretting, and I picked Manchester United finish second and Liverpool third, and I'm already teetering on that.
Wow. OK. A lot of people want to mention James Milner in amongst the excitement over Keita. Flan Master P. Is he one of the best free transfers in the Premier League ever? He put in another good showing this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, he's done really well. I must admit, I've always really liked James Milner, but I was sceptical about the idea he'd get a regular place in central midfield. And we still have to wait and see when others come into the side whether he maintains his place. But he's still got great drive and great energy. And yeah, I thought he was their standout player, actually. And I know it was only a West Ham side that are, you know, still reformatting with several new signings. But when you look at Liverpool's record last season, they were unbeaten at home. But I think they drew 7 games. They did have a problem against, you know, teams they should beat. So I think it was a pretty positive result and a positive performance for Liverpool to win so comfortably.
What about for the Hammerstein asking, how much time do we think Pellegrini will need to form his ideal West Ham side? Tom, would you care to hazard a guess on that?
I mean, on the evidence of the game at Liverpool, it will take a little while. I mean, like any team that are trying to assimilate lots of new signings, you need time. And to play a Liverpool team who... Okay, they've signed new players as well, but they were already a very effective team anyway.
It's a similar story to Arsenal, really. Unfair to judge on the basis of...
Yeah. And I think you looked at the way they went about that game. I mean, the expectation was, I think, from a lot of us that Mark Noble and Jack Wilshere would play alongside each other. But in actual fact, Declan Rice played as a holding midfielder and Jack Wilshere played as a number 10. Mm. Jack Wilshere didn't really touch the ball once, I don't think, in the first half. So at half-time, they sent on...
His only dangerous moment in the box was when he got that, you know, the ball and it. But anyway, Tom.
So Declan Rice goes off at half time. Robert Snodgrass comes on and Jack Wilshere drops back alongside Mark Noble, which I don't think is a particularly durable partnership. Obviously, they've got Carlos Sanchez to come in. Felipe Anderson made his competitive debut, saw quite a lot of the ball. I thought he looked quite good on the ball, but sort of general vibe seems to be that he didn't really do very much. Yeah, hard to judge West Ham on that showing with all the new players and playing against a team like Liverpool. In the same way that it's hard to be too critical about Arsenal, given the quality of the opposition they were up against.
Elsewhere in top six land, United and Spurs both had 2-1 victories. Which was the more impressive, Tom?
United's wasn't impressive. I mean, they scored very quickly. Paul Pogba penalty with a very deliberate run-up.
One of Mourinho's favourites on the score sheet.
One of Mourinho's favourites.
And the other. You
know. And then Luke Shaw later on. But it was a performance that recalled very strongly a lot of performances we saw from United last season. They had lots of possession, didn't really do anything with it. Alexis Sanchez, who we're all expecting to be firing on all cylinders because he's had a summer off, looked just as bad as he did last season. You know, Leicester, they had Jamie Vardy on the bench, not fully fit after the World Cup, and you know they were lively, and Vardy scores quite soon after coming on. I mean, United never really looked in any danger, but they didn't look particularly impressive either.
Well, the good news for Jose is there were three things for him to get really upset about. One, they looked bewildered when attacked, so that's a bit of an issue. Two, he didn't get any players in after we last spoke on Thursday's transfer deadline day. And three, Paul Pogba making remarks post-game, which seemed to indicate that there is still a lot of discontent with his French star midfielder.
Yeah, which is a shame because I thought he played well. I think from the first minute he hit a brilliant diagonal and it felt like he was in World Cup mode. I think he's actually done all right for Manchester United, to be honest, over his 2 years, but it would be nice to see him become more consistent. But yeah, it seems like they don't get on.
On Wednesday, we previewed the season. We did talk about Leicester, roughly 40 minutes in, if you want to go back and check. But people suggested we didn't. So let's mention something about them here. We could certainly talk about James Maddison's performance, though, which was excellent.
Yeah, he the great thing to see from a player that comes up from the Championship, and Maddison's a £25 million player, which seems a crazy thing to say about a player who's never played top flight football, but he demanded the ball. He was always going to have to do that if Leicester was successful because they didn't really have anyone else to do that. But at Old Trafford on your Premier League debut, there's, you know, that's easier said than done to constantly demand the ball, and he did, and he looks like he's not short of confidence. I think he picked up a bit of a knock in the second half and went off injured, but Claude Puel doesn't seem to think there's any problem. Interestingly, one of the Sunday papers ran a story saying that Claude Puel was now 2 games to save his job.
What?
Which was well sourced and claimed that they were looking at Roberto Martinez and Thierry Henry, one or both of those two as a coming in. But it would be crazy if Leicester, everyone thought they would sack Claude Puel this summer. I think the fans would probably have gone for it.
Right.
It would be crazy for them to then give him the money, allow him to buy young players. The four most expensive signings they've made this summer are between 21 and 24. So they're clearly building for the future. And then sacking 3 games into the season would be a remarkable. Yeah, it would be. Back to the banter Premier League.
Brilliant.
One interesting thing on Manchester United They obviously won on Friday night, as did Liverpool, as did Manchester City, and they were the three title favourites. At the start of the season, Manchester United were between 6 and 7 to 1 to win the league. They're now between 14 and 18 to win the league, having won their first game, which kind of indicates just how impressive everyone thought Manchester City and Liverpool were in comparison with United.
Right.
That's good. That is good statting, that. Mm. That's incredible.
It's mad. I mean, it stuck out at me because it seemed so... It was as if they'd drawn 1-1 at home, basically. That's what you'd expect if that had happened. So for them to win and then the odds to have doubled is remarkable, really.
It is. But, I mean, Spurs' odds would have been insanely long anyway, I imagine. Mm.
I think they started very well. They looked fresh. They pressed well. I think Newcastle came back into the game, as tends to happen when you're a home side chasing it. But it just looked like more of the same from Spurs as we've, well, you know, as we've come to expect.
Exactly the same.
Well, exactly the same, and that's the great thing about Spurs. They had a really good transfer window. People think that they had a bad transfer window because they didn't get any big names in. But for them to keep that squad together, pretty much for two summers running, they've got the best centre back partnership in the league. Best goal scorer in the league. Over the last 3 years, the best goal scoring midfielder. One of the best chance creators in Eriksen. They're punching above their weight. They're competing against sides with, you know, capable of playing their players two or three times as much. And for them to keep it all together at the moment where they're going to a new stadium, when you remember how much that decimated Arsenal's playing resources for 10 years, people have got so caught up in this transfer window obsession that you have to get new big names in. They've done incredibly to keep that squad together, especially because it's a young squad coming into their peak ages. I think they had an absolutely blinding transfer window.
All right. And they fielded a lot of players who were involved in the semi-finals, you know, in the dying stages of the World Cup, none of whom particularly... Well, Harry Kane, yes, seemed to still have issues. Dele Alli looked super fresh. Did you catch his reverse back-heel nutmeg move?
I did, yes, I did. And I also thought that his goal... It's becoming a bit of a Dele Alli trademark, the back post header. I think on commentary they referenced the fact that it was very similar to the goal he scored against Sweden at the World Cup. But he scored quite a few goals for Spurs like that. I remember the game in 2016-17 when Spurs ended Chelsea's winning run, and it was with two headers like that. So that's become, you know, a big part of his game.
Almost a daily occurrence.
Almost, not quite, but yeah. No, but I mean, interesting point about the World Cup players, because I had a look at how the use of World Cup semi-finalists in the Premier League compared to Ligue 1 this weekend, which also resumed, and only one of France's players played any minutes in Liga, and it was Florian Thauvin, and he played 7 minutes for Marseille.
Oh, really?
All the other semi-finalists across all the other clubs were rested, whereas in England, they've all been thrown in at the deep end. And you mentioned Harry Kane, looked very leggy by the time we got to the end of the World Cup. Pretty leggy again against Newcastle, didn't have his best game. And again, this extraordinary statistic about him having never scored a Premier League goal in August. Mm. He's now on 988 August minutes without a goal. And I agree with Michael that Spurs still look, you know, every bit as strong as they were last season, but they are still so dependent on Harry Kane. And you do worry a bit about him burning out, because he's had no sort of break and he's straight back into the thick of it.
Sorry to talk over the top of you, but are they that dependent if they have a 2-1 win and he's almost a passenger?
Well, they're dependent on him playing every game, particularly when Heung-min Son goes off to the Asian Cup reasonably shortly. The answer seems to be that whether he's fit or not, he starts. And because he's so much better than Fernando Llorente and Vincent Janssen, that even a 50%, 40% fit Harry Kane is considered a better option than that. And I think that speaks partly to his quality, but also to just how close-knit that Spurs first-choice team is.
Right. On a Spurs note, also a lot of people like Callum Paylor asking about their kit. Yeah. The interesting thing about it, and it's a design surely more clubs will be adopting, is it features a map of North London. I don't know, in case the bus gets lost or whatever. But yeah, did it work
just,
for you, Tom?
Just pulled it up here on his laptop. And when you see it up close and you can see the map, it makes a bit more sense. From a distance, it looks a little bit strange. It's sort of dark blue at the top and then kind of, what would you say that is, teal?
Yeah.
From sort of like the chest down. And it has got this sort of map of North London imprint on it. But yeah, from like the distance that you watch on TV, not a great kit. And there've been quite a few of these slightly random, very kind of 90s like fade kits been brought. But last season we kind of went a lot more retro and there were some lovely kits around. This season it's almost like the kit manufacturers are running out of ideas, having to churn out three new kits every season. There are a few more of these slightly weird sort of blendy numbers. Mm. Also on the kit front, Newcastle's new kit, quite a thin stripe on the Newcastle home shirt this year. I'm not a massive fan of thin stripes. I like a good thick stripe. personally,
I love the redesign on the Melchester Rovers kit.
I haven't seen that
last season. That's really nice.
On the Spurs one, this is actually quite difficult to pick out when you're watching the games. Mm. I mean, it's roughly the same colour as the pitch.
Yeah.
Which is why not many teams play in that kind of colour.
Interesting you should mention that. When watching Man City's game against Arsenal, I wondered if their fluorescent yellow socks were perhaps a Guardiola note, because I imagine that makes them incredibly easy for players to pick out.
Yeah. Well, Barcelona had a similar coloured third kit in Guardiola's time there. So
Didn't he, though, get
involved with the kit design.
I'd be surprised if he wasn't. Newcastle, Daniel, quick word on them. They hit the woodwork a couple of times.
Yeah, they just lacked a little bit of spark in the clutch moments of the games, which is what happens when a squad is built up of players who have basically, I think all 11 of their starters played from last season, and 8 of them regularly played in the Championship season. The saddest thing about Newcastle and the headline from that game is that on the morning of the first game of the season ticket holders are protesting against the owner in the town centre, which is the antipathy of what new season joy should be all about. Mm. So I think it'll be a long, hard season for them.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at roytheroversofficial.com.
Newly promoted teams, including Tom Williams at Craven Cottage, on the way. First, though, let me just give a shout out to the Totally Football League show, which is back with Caroline Barker on Tuesday. By then, the new Totally Scottish Football show will be available as well. Andrew Slaven and company will be talking about all sorts of things like Celtic losing this weekend. Of course, they've got a big game Tuesday night away at AEK in their Champions League preliminaries, 1-1 from the first leg. Rangers, they got their first win under Steven Gerrard. They've got a big game on Thursday with Maribor. They're 3-1 up from the first leg. Hibs, only draw this weekend. They're at Mulder on Thursday. Very excited about Hibs under Neil Lennon, the entertainers. Anyway, all that sort of stuff about all of the Scottish football scene that's coming out with Andrew from, I think, Monday night, Tuesday morning. Golazzo returns on Wednesday afternoon-ish, previewing what looks set to be an extraordinary season in the peninsula. Of course, as you mentioned, Tom, France, they've already gone and got the season underway, haven't they? Crazy scenes. Paris Saint-Germain, 3-0 winners over Cannes. Why was this exciting?
Well, it was interesting because PSG are still waiting for a lot of their World Cup players to come back. So they started with some youngsters. Colin Dagba started at right back, Stanley Nsocki at left back, and Antoine Bernard in midfield.
And Timothy Weah.
And Timothy Weah came on and scored his first Ligue 1 goal.
Yeah.
Weah Fils, indeed.
Yeah, the exciting, extraordinary thing is that he scored with Gigi Buffon debuting in the Paris Saint-Germain goal. And when Buffon debuted in his professional career, Tim Weah's dad was on the field, you know, for the opposition, because it was Parma Milan.
Indeed.
Is that exciting?
I found that. Circle of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's a good start for PSG. Neymar started, played through the middle for the first time in his PSG career and scored the opening goal. So they're up and running. And
Lyon, 2-0 win over Amiens.
With a lovely Memphis Depay free kick on a really horrible pitch. They relayed their pitch, Lyon, and it hasn't really taken because of the heat wave in France. So they were a bit miffed about that.
What about Bertrand Traoré's double nutmeg? Did you see that?
Yes, yeah, nice goal. So Traoré started up front with Depay just behind him, and all the top four last season got off to winning starts. PSG, Lyon, Marseille won 4-0 against Toulouse. A couple of goals for Dimitri Payet, who is hoping to get over his Europa League final and World Cup heartache. And Monaco won 3-1 at Nantes. Not such a great start for Patrick Vieira at Nice, whose team lost 1-0 at home to Reims.
Right, with Balotelli out of the squad.
Balotelli out of the squad and seemingly on his way out. Marseille have been poised to buy him all summer, but it hasn't happened yet. So he's going to pop up somewhere.
Right. What's that, Michael? What happened in Spain? Well, two things of great interest. One, Barcelona claimed the 2018 Spanish Super Cup with a 2-1 win over Sevilla in Tangier, uniquely. Ben Yedder missing a last-minute spot kick for Sevilla. The other exciting thing was Santi Cazorla's unveiling at Villarreal. Why, Dan?
It was sort of literal smoke and mirrors.
It was a Spinal Tap homage.
Yes, it was. But it was so drawn out and so that kind of unveiling, it's so obvious that what's going to happen, that there's no... the magician who was performing the trick seemed to sort of think that there was going to be some surprise element to it. But everyone knew that there was one canister that Santi Cazorla was probably going to come out of,
right.
and he did.
Okay, still magic though, wasn't it? Like he still emerged from a puff of smoke.
I got to hold my hands up. I didn't see. I mean, I've seen stills of it. What happens? There's an empty canister, and then
an empty canister. It fills up with smoke. There's a lot of waving of arms. The waving of arms stops. The smoke also stops. The smoke then begins to clear. The door is thrust open, and a smiling, handsome Santa Cazorla is standing there.
Sounds good.
I've made it sound really good there.
It did, yeah.
Actual magic. I think they've raised the bar.
Glad you liked it, Tom. Elsewhere in the wide world of football, the Germans had their Super Cup. Robert Lewandowski getting his shooting boots back on and scoring a hat-trick in a 5-goal trouncing for Bayern Munich over Eintracht Frankfurt. Here's C. Fitzgerald Morgan, who says, late entry, but please, can we have a moment for Wayne Rooney's DC United last-ditch tackle and assist in the MLS.
Hard after defensively, Wayne Rooney, the net is empty. Big collision by the captain. That is unbelievable.
Extraordinary moments, this. You may have seen the video. If you haven't, it's DC United against Orlando City. It's the 95th minute, and the score is tied at 2 goals apiece. DC, Rooney's team, have the corner, though, and their keeper has come up to try and snatch a last-gasp winner, but oh my word, the ball comes out instead to an Orlando player who's streaking now towards the goal, suddenly has the entire empty field ahead of him. He's at the 30, the 40, the 50, their 40, when all of a sudden, whammo, in comes Wayne Rooney. Dan, what a moment. Not only does Wayne Rooney completely clatter him off the ball, but Wayne then gets up, stumbles forward, and puts an absolutely beautiful diagonal ball in, two checks notes, Acosta, who scores the winning goal in the 96th minute.
Yeah, any league in which Wayne Rooney is sprinting in the 96th minute of a match, having started that same match, to tackle someone to then set up a goal reflects badly on everyone.
You don't like magic, do you? Cazorla, Rooney?
Yeah.
All right, then. Hey, how about those newly promoted teams in the Premier League? Tom Williams, you went to Croom Cottage. How did that feel to be back there on the banks of the River Thames?
It felt delightful. I mean, Craven Cottage, as we all know, is a lovely place to go and watch football. It was a lovely day, nice and sunny. And I think the fact that it was Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace as the opposition meant that there was lots of good vibes. And I watched the Fulham players get off the coach and obviously they're cheered and everything. And then the Palace coach turns up and I was kind of expecting boos because that's usually what happens. But Roy Hodgson is the first person to poke his head off the coach and he gets a big cheer.
Also, it's Fulham. Do they boo people?
Perhaps not. But it's not really a Fulham thing, is it? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, lovely to be back at Craven Cottage. And, yeah, Fulham with 6 new signings in their starting 11. 7 if you include Alexander Mitrovic, who has joined on a permanent basis. And that included both their goalkeeper, Fabry, and 3 of the back 4. You had Jean-Michel Seri in midfield, who pinged the ball around very nicely. And André Schürrle on the right of their front 3. And they started well, Fulham. They had most of the ball. They were knocking it around well. I thought Mitrovic did really well. He was up against James Tomkins and Mamadou Sakho. You know, pretty unpleasant centre-back pairing to come up against. But he created a few chances for himself. And Wayne Hennessy, who was brilliant for Palace, got in the way each time. But Palace scored shortly before half-time. Jeff Schlupp just managed to get the wrong side of Callum Chambers and scored from quite a narrow angle. And from then on, Palace were content to sit back. It played into their hands. We know how they played from last season, using the pace of Townsend and Zaha on the counter-attack. And Fulham didn't really lay a glove on them in the second half. And then towards the end, lovely bit of play by Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Palace's young right-back, who was absolutely fantastic up against Ryan Sessegnon all afternoon. Did really well against him. Shrugs off a challenge from Mitrovic, sidesteps Sessegnon, and then frees Zaha to run through and score. So lots of encouragement for Fulham in terms of the quality of their football, but ultimately taught a bit of a lesson in Premier League realism. And a great start for Palace, obviously. It took them 8 games to avoid defeat last season, so right. they look a lot better this time around.
Have some of that Julien Laurent, who on Wednesday was busy touting Palace to go down, and largely on the basis that he didn't like them. Yeah. Which, I don't know. Anyway, Wolves, of course, the other free-spending promoted side, they took on Everton. A 2-2 draw against the 10-man Toffee outfit. But 10 men that featured one, Richarlison, who was the big story of this game.
He was. Because, as Michael alluded to with Spurs, we've become so obsessed with the transfer market and transfer fees. A player is now defined and judged on his transfer fee before he's even played a game for his new club, which seems ridiculous. To my mind, there's no difference between really between Everton paying 30 million or 40 million to get Richarlison. If that's the player they want and that's the player that Marcus Silva wants and at 21 years old believes he can improve, then it was worth doing the deal. And he's already scored twice and looked the game's best player and looked dangerous. And
well, the first goal was bundled in, but the second goal spoke of a player with real technique.
Yeah, he's got such pace and dribbling ability that defenders are instantly on the back foot, which because they're afraid of having to suddenly turn around and run towards their own goal, which means he was able to basically use the central defender as a guide to curl his shot round, a la Thierry Henry, which is a huge compliment to Richarlison, but in a similar vein. One interesting thing about the game, I thought, Everton had more shots on target with 10 men than they did in 21 of Sam Allardyce's 26 league games. It was interesting to hear Allardyce on the radio blaming Pellegrini for how West Ham sat up and blaming Marco Silva for Everton's flaws. And yeah, there is a man who is enjoying his new media career.
Right. Probably. A lot of people asking, we're going to see him again soon, aren't we? On a bench. Just on the Richarlison subject, it wasn't just the price tag that had people raising their eyebrows. It was the fact that also he hadn't scored since November 2017. He's scoring with his first shot here, Tom, having failed on his previous 53 shots with Watford. Was this a fluke or are, as Penguin of Truth asks, lots of people are going to have to swallow their pride and admit they got it wrong?
Well, Penguin of Truth. I mean, I think we were all really impressed by Richarlison last season, and then he went off the boil. And as a result, the amount of money that Everton paid for him stood out as much as it did. But I think you saw in the early performances last season how good he was. I mean, the way he took that second goal told you a lot that you need to know about his ability. Interestingly, the first Everton player to score on his debut since Joe in 2009. Oh. So what could possibly go wrong?
One of the other big talking points from this game, Michael, was the red card which left Everton with just 10 men, Phil Jagielka. Not sure. Was it ever cleared up whether it was for dangerous play or for denying goal-scoring opportunity?
A dangerous play, I thought.
Yeah, OK. Yeah. Some people felt it was harsh and that the subsequent three-game ban is going to be harsh on Everton. But
I don't really agree. I thought it was a red card tackle.
OK.
Agreed.
It's also not that hard. It probably isn't that harsh on Everton on the basis that they've got Yerry Mina and Kurt Zouma ready to step in, and I suspect that may well be one of Jagielka's last starts this season.
Other thoughts on Wolves? Ruben Neves' free kick? Be impressed?
I mean, Ruben Neves, there's a lot of expectation. We saw what he did in the Championship last season, and it says here on my notes that he has scored 7 goals from outside the box since the beginning of last season, which is more than any other player in England's 4 professional leagues, and scores a fantastic free kick, sets up the equaliser for Jimenez. And I mean, last season he was not just a Premier League player in the Championship, he was a Champions League player in the Championship. So I think we can expect to see more of that from him this season.
The other newly promoted side, Cardiff, of course, 2-0 losers at Bournemouth, so there's that.
Yeah, they seem almost in a category of their own this season, Cardiff, in the sense of the other two sides they've come up, we're expecting them to finish mid-table or above. I mean, Cardiff, in terms of both personnel and maybe more personally style, do seem like a Championship, like a mid-table Championship side, really. They did very well to get up. I can't imagine they're going to get many points away from home, and I think the home record is going to be really what gives them a chance of staying up.
They also sit on their own in terms of playing style. Warnock is going to do exactly what Warnock does. They had the lowest passing accuracy by 8%. They had the lowest possession in the Premier League this weekend. They completed the fewest passes. They effectively just play it very long. And now that they've signed Bobby Reid and didn't play Ken Zahore, who is actually a very physical striker, it just didn't work. And yeah, I fear for them.
Another Cardiff point, Neil Etheridge, their goalkeeper, the first Philippines international to play in the Premier League, and he saved a penalty from Callum Wilson.
I was surprised to hear that he is actually Filipino. How does that
work?
He
was born in London, I believe, to a Filipino mother, and I think he represented England at schoolboy level, but got the call from the Philippines when they realised that there was this connection. I think he's got about 60-odd caps for them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Really interesting bloke, Etheridge, in that he basically dropped out of professional football for a while. And then suddenly got a call and played a bit and got a move to Cardiff and now is a Premier League goalkeeper. It's a really good story.
You get that a lot, don't you, of Premier League keepers who used to be... There was a Fulham keeper who was in the army. Mike Taylor. Mike Tate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. That was a really odd one.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's been others who... Because you can have a day job, can't you, if you're a keeper?
No, Southall was a binman.
Exactly. Anyway, on the subject of keepers, just a couple of other points before we let you go, listener, on this opening Totally Football show of the season. Burnley had a 0-0 draw at Saints, which featured the return of Joe Hart between the posts and a clean sheet for Joe. It also meant Burnley have notched up two goalless draws in a row because they did against Başakşehir of Istanbul in the Europa League. They've got second leg coming up on Thursday. That's a big game for Clarets. Watford, meanwhile, 2-0 winners over Brighton. Chris Hughton very down on his Seagulls' chances afterwards. Watford's goals from Roberto Pereira.
First one was an absolute zinger. Sort of Paul Scholes-esque, loitering on the edge of the box at a corner. I think it was Hollibas puts in a cross and catches it beautifully. I really like Pereira as a player, and we didn't see all that much of him last season. He only made 18 starts, and I think he'll probably be the chief beneficiary of Richarlison's departure.
Right. You'd have thought Brighton might want to pick him up because, looking at the stats, he has scored 5 and assisted the other of Watford's last 6 goals in the Premier League. That's some consistency.
He feels like he might be Watford's Abdoulaye Doucouré this season, suddenly scoring goals, and Etienne Capoue the season before, of a player that suddenly starts scoring goals at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's hope he has a little bit more consistency from the Hornets' point of view. Well, that's it for the Premier League weekend. Michael, anything else you want to add at this stage?
Yeah, I just really enjoy the fact that all the transfer nonsense has been out of the way, really. I remember a game a few years ago in North London Derby where Arsenal won 1-0 against Tottenham, traditionally the biggest game of the season, and we were all talking about whether Ozil was coming, whether Bale was going. And we just got to talk about the football this weekend, and it was... You know, the transfers have fed into the football games rather than the football games feeding into transfer rumours. And it might not have worked out for the Premier League. They might be worse off financially and they're still open to losing some players. But from a viewer's point of view, I very much enjoyed just being able to focus on the games.
Nice. Of course, Eriksen, one of the players that they might lose out, a lot of talk of Real Madrid on this Monday, are formulating a major swoop for him. Well, I tell you what, Daniel, you came up with an amazing... odd statistic about Man United earlier. If you like that kind of thing, you may well enjoy this. As here comes producer Ben talking to our friends at Paddy Power, who've got loads of odds.
Thank you, Jimbo. Time for the highlight of the show. It's Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, how are you doing?
I'm feeling very good. A great weekend of football. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you, Lee. Certainly better than most Arsenal fans. Let's talk about them first. I've got a feeling they could be bottom of the league by the end of August. They've got some really hard games coming up.
Yeah, I love this. It only took one game for all the optimism and new start chat to absolutely disappear. A thorough beating by the champions and they're back to moaning. The odds here are quite short. When you sent this through, I thought, oh, no chance. The trades make this 4-1. That tough fixture list, as you say, could make it happen. It'd be hilarious.
Let's stick with the bottom of the table. West Ham got absolutely spanked by Liverpool 4-0. Great performance by Liverpool. Not so good by this new look West Ham team. Are they going to be in relegation trouble this season?
West Ham's getting relegated 7-1. That has come in a bit, but it is only one match against Liverpool, who everyone fancies. So time will tell, but worrying times for sure.
I noticed that Daniel Sturridge came off the bench and scored within 2 seconds of coming onto the pitch. Could he get 20 goals this season?
Yeah, he scored with his first touch. I don't think he can. I'd be surprised if he gets 20 appearances in. But it's 10-1. He scores more than 20 Premier League goals. If he does, Liverpool surely be title contenders because he's not even their first choice forward.
And Harry Kane continued his miserable form going into the new season. He still hasn't scored in August ever. Is he going to do it this year or is the drought going to continue?
It's looking more and more likely that the drought will continue. Maybe he should have August off. Paul clearly needs a break. He looked knackered at the World Cup. That continued for Tottenham. It's 3-1 that Kane doesn't score this August. But it'd be remarkable he didn't.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. That's it then for today's Totally Football Show. I hope you have a great week. Tom, I know you're off to see The Meg.
I am indeed.
I don't think I'm going to go and watch it. I saw an excoriating, is that a word, excoriating? Mm. Film this weekend. I'm really late to this. If you're looking for a movie and you like a really rough time at the cinema, but then afterwards kind of have a lot to think about, First Reformed, Ethan Hawke's movie. He plays a clergyman.
Yeah, I've seen the posters.
Oh, it's a there's barbed wire. There's all sorts of stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I mean, the Meg is probably going to be dreadful, but I quite like shark films.
Back to my film, though, which directed by Paul Schrader, you know, who wrote, like, Taxi Driver and every great film ever, Raging Bull, that. It's an amazing film. Very thought-provoking. Anyway, sorry, Michael, what's your week hold?
Nothing apart from watching football, I'm afraid, James.
Brilliant. You're living the dream.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right. Okay, and Daniel?
Very much the same, thankfully.
Damn. Listeners, we'll be back on Thursday with more football watching folk. Do join us then. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the revamped Totally Football League show with Caroline Barker and the brand new Totally Scottish Football Show.